It's time for the Cast and Blast Florida Podcast. Serious outdoorsmen who don't take themselves too seriously.
What's new, Nate?
I sort of kind of have a fishing boat now.
What?
What?
Yeah, this is real life. My girlfriend's dad, they have their family, like extended family, have a lake house kind of near the South Carolina border up here. He likes to fish, but he doesn't do it a lot. And we usually just hire a guide when we do. But he wants one when we go to the lake on the weekends, like a little John boat or something just to have to kind of tinker around with and, you know, just go out and bass fish a little bit or whatever. So he was like, hey, find one, pick one out, and we'll get it. And I was like, okay. So we found a little 14-foot with a little 9.9 Tohatsu 4-stroke on the back of it. It'll run about 16 with two people and gear. But it's a nice little boat. It's got a little Lowrance that's a GPS and fish finder. I mean, it's a nice little setup for what we're trying to do.
Are you doing some striper fishing? Or are you doing some just, is it large?
We have done some striper fishing. So right now we're just kind of getting the lay of the land kind of near their lake house and just kind of figuring out what's going on. We catch like brim and stuff off their dock. We'd like to get into either striper fishing or crappie fishing or speck fishing as normal people call it, or do some largemouth stuff too. So
right on.
It's exciting.
That's big time.
Wow. Okay then.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah. We're gonna try it out, see what happens. So
what's new with you, Travis?
What's new, Travis?
Once again, as I wait, flail my arms around in the studio, begging someone to ask me what's new. We are semi back from vacation. Like we've been coasting a little bit the last few weeks. And this is the last episode where we're doing something different. We're doing part two of stories in this episode.
Yes.
But we've managed to, between charters and work and getting away and as a family, both of our families together, and Emily's actually got another vacation coming up today. She'll be leaving.
Yeah. So when this episode goes live, I'll be in New York, New York.
The city's so nice, they named it twice.
Also known as Manhattan.
I would like for you to check out a local pizza joint up there. I've heard of Sparrow.
I've heard that's the world's best pizza.
It's one of the best. It's my favorite pizza joint in New York City.
I'm also going to see
if I can find it's pretty popular.
Conan O'Brien.
Maybe eat at Red Lobster.
Yeah.
Joe's Crab Shack. So some upcoming stuff we've got planned. We're going to do an actual back from vacation episode once Emily is back from vacation because she's perpetually on vacation. We're going to do a topwater bait draft. We're going to do some taxidermy stuff. We're going to talk to some taxidermists.
Gross.
No, not gross. It's awesome. And then we're working behind the scenes on an episode entirely devoted to the Lake Okeechobee, Big Sugar, Red Tide, freshwater discharge, all that stuff. We're going to be putting together kind of an expose episode coming up in a few weeks. So anyway, what's new with you, Em?
We have new reviews. We have two new reviews. Should I hear them both?
Please.
Read them both. Okay. This one is from Tyler and Sarah. I'm a client of Travis and he got us hooked on the podcast eating breakfast after a duck hunt. I've never been a podcast fan, so I was skeptical. This show is great, hilarious, a lighter side of the outdoor industry. A novice outdoorsman all the way up to professional can and will enjoy this podcast. Travis, Nate, and Emily feed off of each other and make this show very entertaining. My girlfriend and I look forward to every Tuesday and love discussing the topics together after we listen to the podcast. I'm also ready for Lil Warby to get back in the mix. That guy has some potential.
We've got some plans for Lil Warby in the future.
Lil Warby.
We were just discussing
him.
Off air.
Yeah, he may be coming up on another episode soon.
Lil Warby is a great special guest. He gets a little bit of the stage fright, though.
First, let me say this. I think we call Tyler Hoop. I think that's his nickname. Hoop.
Hoop.
I think that's what we call him.
Hoop-de-doop.
Yeah, but Sarah is the better part of that equation. Sarah is freaking awesome.
Is she?
Yes.
I was going to say, since you guys listen to the show and then discuss the topics together afterwards, Sarah, hit me up if there's anything we need to cover, like a love language or some chores that need to get done around the house. We could talk about it on the show and then it might merit some discussion for you and Tyler afterwards.
Don't do that, Sarah.
We're happy to do
that,
Sarah.
Don't do what she just said.
We are not your marriage counselors.
No. And I think Tyler and Sarah are perfectly happy with the show the way it is. They don't want you like delving into whatever you call love languages and stuff.
Stirring
like,
up this things.
Shenanigans.
Okay.
Who else you got?
Okay. Next one is, I don't know. I'm going to call him Joey. Versax Joey. I don't even know what this is. I love y'all's podcast. I messaged Travis on Instagram and told him it makes me feel like I'm sitting around all my buddies just talking it up. My family and me, wife and kids, listen to y'all from Tennessee to Florida, then from Florida back to... Is M.O. Missouri?
Yes. M.O. is Missouri. Emily, thank you. Anytime you can put a review with any kind of geographic reference in it, that is a game changer for us.
It's well documented.
Yeah.
That I'm terrible.
Because it shows just how smart Travis and I are when we're not really the smartest ones in the room.
Correct. It's like the only chance we have.
Anyway,
fishing, hunting, and geography.
They said we made their 10-hour drive manageable. We are definitely a keep. Aw, we're a keep. That's cute.
They subjected kids to this?
Yes.
He did message me. And great family, great guy. Always out doing something with his
Thank
kids.
Thank goodness
outdoors.
We cleaned it up.
I think we've always been pretty clean.
Fairly clean.
Yeah, we've never really gone off the deep end with
I
that
I think
kind
we
of stuff.
Said the H word and the A word before.
Yeah, the outtakes maybe. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's a reason they're outtaken.
Wow.
There's a reason they're outtook. Anyway, we just wanted to pop in and say hello to you guys. To set the table, we're about to do episode 2 of Stories. We just finished chastising Travis for his bad weather decisions in last week's episode.
Oh my gosh, yes. When you kept getting to the punchline before I could even say
Sorry.
It, you ruined my whole story. Oy vey.
Anyway, we're going to be doing some more storytelling episodes, although we're getting back to our regular format for the most part, but we're also looking at launching another podcast series kind of in parallel with this one that will handle a lot of fun stories like that. So thank you guys for all the positive feedback on that. Didn't you guys get caught in that very same boat in a bad storm one time?
Yeah.
That Tammy was holding her children and praying to survive?
I'll tell this story. I haven't told a story yet. I'll tell this story. You had just bought the boat.
It was the first year we owned the boat. First boat I ever owned, really.
First, yeah. Mm-hmm. And first year.
It was a Pathfinder. Great boat.
Yeah.
Unsinkable, apparently.
An 1810 Pathfinder.
Not the year. That was the length.
First year we had it at the island. And we are going to go visit some friends who are staying in Inglewood. We decide, hey, it's calm enough to run up to Inglewood on the outside. So we ran up there on the outside. Had dinner,
what
had
is
a great
that,
time.
10 miles?
8 miles.
7.
Okay.
And it's Stump Pass. You go out Gasparilla Pass and you go in Stump Pass.
In Stump Pass. Mm-hmm. So we go have dinner, have a great time. While we're eating, a thunderstorm blows in. And by the time we're leaving, it's done. It's quit raining.
Right.
And we decide, hey, I think it's calm enough. We can run the outside again.
And there's a reason we're on the outside. There's this section of the intercoastal called the Miserable Mile where you have to idle speed because of the manatees, which is fine. We love manatees. But we had to idle. And so rather than doing that, we wanted to actually run it because it really is only 7 miles.
You're talking like a 20-minute boat ride versus a hour and a half boat ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we decide, hey, let's go back out Stump Pass and let's run the outside. And there are literally 8-foot rollers in Stump Pass.
Once we got deep into the pass.
Yeah, we didn't realize this until we were too...
You had a tide against the wind, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, it was like, you know those videos of the Jupiter Inlet guys coming in and like spearing waves? Well, we get out into the ocean.
I was thinking Perfect Storm, but yes.
And we decide it's too rough to run outside. So we're like, we got to get back in the pass. Hindsight 2020, we probably should have just took our time on the outside and just kind of rolled.
Hang on.
Yeah.
I would like to hear from Tammy as to what her thought process was at this point.
So we're in this boat with our children who are not very old.
I was 12 or 13. 8. Caleb was 8. Matt was probably 5.
And I literally thought, this is it. This is how we're going to die. And so all I knew to do was to grab our children and, well, I think I just grabbed 2 of them because, Nate, you were helping Dad. So I
Thanks,
grabbed
Mom.
The other 2. I know. And we hunkered down in the boat, and the waves were literally coming into our boat.
So
once we get out and realize that it's too rough, we turn. We have to turn around, go back through Stump Pass.
Well, let me get us through Stump Pass. So going out, and the waves were 8, probably, and they were coming over. And I was confident. I mean, you know, I'm a boat owner. I was confident that we were going to die right there. And, yeah, this is, yeah, so we got out. And then we got out, and it flattened out a little bit.
Right.
But then I thought, we got to go back.
Yeah.
We can't run the outside. We got to go back through this. So
we turn around. We start going back in Stump Pass. And we speared a wave, which is how boats sink, by the way.
Yes.
So we speared a wave in like 1,000 gallons of water coming our boat. It's the scariest moment I've ever had on the boat by far. Mm-hmm. And we all have life jackets on. We're all like, Kaylee and Matt are crying. Mom's probably on the verge of tears.
I'm crying.
Dad's like white faced, white knuckled. Like, we can't. And so eventually we get it to the point where we kind of like surf a wave in. So like we get on top of the wave and just kind of stay on top of the wave and just kind of ride it in. And we got back inside.
And happily made that hour trip back.
Yes.
Yeah, happily.
It was,
this is one of those times where you lay in your bed that night and you think of what might have happened.
Could have happened.
And you kind of get wide awake again.
Right.
And, so yeah, it was thank scary. God he took care of us that day.
Somebody got to bring it back up.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put that one on there.
Yeah.
Oh, let's stay in. Okay, I have a question. Do any of you have, because he's become a bit of a legend on the podcast, do any of you have any Uncle Tim stories that you can share with our listeners?
I have one that involves Tim, Uncle Tim, but it's Uncle Tim's dad, my father-in-law.
Okay.
This is a great story.
So Tim is my wife's brother, and so her dad, Bobby, great guy. He's passed away now 20 years ago, but great guy. We were, and this involves Steve and Travis as well. So we were dove hunting, and Steve and Travis, myself, Tim, and Bobby, we're dove hunting one afternoon.
I just and remembered what story you're telling.
Right. And we were covered up with doves. And in fact, before the night was over or before the afternoon was over, we were scrounging around the bed of the truck under the seats for shells because we ran out of shells. The doves were flying. So, and we shot a lot of doves that day. It was fun. But we were surrounded kind of by this neighborhood. And we were out in this field, and apparently, allegedly, somebody peppered some of the houses. We think it was Bobby.
We know it was Bobby.
We know it was Bobby. And
I believe that's in the deposition, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So somebody called the sheriff's department, and so the sheriff's department came out there, and they rode along this road. Well, Bobby is facing the field with his back toward where the sheriff's car pulled up. So he's, you know, 50 or 70 yards away from where the sheriff pulled up, and he can't hear very well. So we're all at the other end of the field, and the sheriff started yelling at Bobby, "Hey, come here." And Bobby ignored him because he couldn't hear him. And so we're waving at Bobby and pointing, and so Bobby thinks, "Hey, there are more doves flying. Let me start shooting." And so he's got his waving his gun all over the place. And so the sheriff's deputy finally says, "Hey, don't make me come out there." So we're all now almost in a sprint running toward Bobby, trying to get him from being arrested that day for continuing to shoot when the sheriff's deputy was yelling at him. And I mean, it was.
I remember Uncle Tim saying it was, "Don't make me come get you, boy."
Yeah, that's right.
That's
a quasi Uncle Tim story, but that's it
verbatim.
Was Uncle Tim the one that said that's a dead snipe?
Oh yeah.
Could you tell that story?
Well, we were all, you know, finding ourselves. We thought we were pretty good shots, wing shots, that is. So we were down hunting an area that was full of snipe, and as we
the
came,
Mecca.
Who it was?
Tim,
me,
you, Terry, myself,
and Bobby. Your father wasn't Bobby.
I don't think he was.
I think there was four of us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Four of us.
And we have this place we called the Mecca because it attracted so many snipe.
I mean, oh, it was
hundreds and hundreds, and we loved to shoot snipe.
Yeah.
And Tim always claims he's going to write a book someday called "Snipe I Have Known."
Yes. And so we see this snipe come flying over, and they'll do this sometimes very high, and we said, snipe, snipe. We're watching him up there, and we're all standing up on the road.
End of the day. We're getting ready to get in the truck and go home.
And this snipe, the way they land, they just kind of fall like, and all of a sudden, he just collapsed and flew, and he lit probably 50 yards off that road. And I don't know who said it, whether it was all of us or Tim.
I believe it was Uncle Tim.
That's one dead snipe.
Well, first of all, we'd already unloaded.
Emptied our guns.
We're safe. And so we unloaded our guns, and we, you know, had all our shells and our vests and everything, getting ready to get in the trucks. We saw that snipe come over. So all of a sudden you hear, sounding like one of those Westerns, you know, when the bad guy was coming into town.
And so we proceeded to get out there, four abreast, walking where that snipe was. And that dead snipe jumped up, and he started flying. And every one of us unloaded our guns, except your Uncle Tim shot twice. I don't know why he didn't shoot three times.
Because every other time he's ever pulled a trigger, he shot three times.
But so that was, you know, four people. That's 12 possible shots. So we shot 11 times. And Uncle Tim says, that dead snipe's still flying. And that was it. So that one dead snipe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Uncle Tim, another episode, we were down there, same place, snipe hunting, two different vehicles. And
he was in his yo.
He was in the yo. Mm-hmm. So he leaves, and Terry discovers, oh, Tim left something here. We got to get it to him. So I start.
I thought it was his kid, but I'm not sure.
It has happened. I start chasing in my old 1986 ragged out Jeep Cherokee, and I'm not gaining on him, and he's in a four-cylinder Toyota. And the roads, and all of a sudden I am gaining on him, but all of a sudden he looks up and sees that I'm behind him, and he stops. And I locked up that old Jeep, did everything I could. I almost run into the back of him, and he's just as calm and collected and gets out like, hey, what's up? You know, that's your Uncle Tim. Unflappable. You know.
Were one of you telling us that he would get to the dove field and cook breakfast? Who was telling us?
So we had this dove field that there were, I don't know, 10 or 11 of us that leased it. And Uncle Tim was on it, and Steve and myself and Travis and Nate obviously came. Matt came later. So we would go out there, and when the second phase or probably the third phase started and it would get cooler, we'd go out there and hunt the mornings, because you could hunt in the mornings, not just the afternoons like in phase one. So we'd get out there, and we'd be out there hunting and everything, and you'd look around and say, you know, where's Tim? And you'd look down at the end of the dove field, and he'd have his little Toyota backed up with a Coleman stove and all kind of paraphernalia, and he's over there cooking eggs and bacon, and I don't know, maybe he had an oven cooking biscuits. I don't know.
It was a feast.
But it was a feast. And so I don't remember whether we shot any doves that day, but we had some really good breakfast.
We did.
But since we're talking dove hunting, that was so much fun, because Travis would eat these exploding donuts. He would bite into them, and this white powdery stuff would come all out in the cab of the truck. No, he was old enough.
He was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And he'd get out covered in powdered sugar, and he wouldn't eat them.
Travis, I got arrested once because they thought it was cocaine.
And he offered Terry his drink one time, and Terry looked at it and said, oh, my gosh, what is in the bottom of this? And just handed it back to him. But then the funny thing, too, was Nate, he wasn't really too good of a shot at the time, but he would get one dead dove he'd pick out, and he would fly that dove all the way home in the back of the vehicle.
He would talk to it.
He would talk to it. He would autopsy it. Just fly it, you know. We'd look back there, and we'd nod to one another, and like, look back in the back seat. You know, what's going on? This kid's, he's flying this dove.
That's from his mom's side of the family. Yeah.
That's straight from Uncle Tim right there.
So when Nate was like five and too young to shoot, he'd take his BB gun out to the same dove field, and he'd wear those big rubber boots and everything. They call them in Europe, they call them wellies. So he wore his wellies out there. And so he would retrieve the doves. He loved to do that. I couldn't afford a dog. So so Nate would retrieve doves. And, you know, I shot down, of course, every day, every time we went out there, I killed my limit. And so he would go.
Which was three.
Right. So Nathan would retrieve the doves, and I had taught him at some point when he was five or six to how to kind of wring the dove's neck if it was not, you know, to dispatch the dove, if you would.
Humanely, ethically, and quickly.
Exactly. Very quickly, because you don't want to see it suffer. So I remember one day he came up and he wrung the dove's neck, and the dove just kind of flew off, and he had the head in his hand. And he just opened his hand, looked at the head, and he looked up at me, and he said, "These heads are pretty fragile."
No doves were injured in the making of this podcast, okay? Just understand that. Hey, but let me tell you about Matt on one of our camping trips. We got to where camping was the most fun.
Yes, this is a great story.
And Matt was a little bit of an arsonist. He would drag everything he could drag. We just sit around and watch him just drag stuff up and burn it. And burn. And so the next morning, we're there, we're eating breakfast, and we got a little fire going. And Matt, he was still in diapers. You got to understand this.
He's 3 years old at this point.
He comes.
Yeah, he was like 3 or 4. He had a pull-up that he slept in.
Right.
Because he drank so much chocolate milk that you had to put a pull-up on him. So, yeah. So I went in the tent and helped him get out of his pull-up.
And he walked out, and we're sitting there watching him. He comes out like he's making this some kind of offering, burnt offering to you know, God or something, you know, a sacrifice. And he's carrying this thing, and I'm watching him, and he walks over to the fire and just throws that old pull-up on that fire, and away it goes. And he just looks around with a big old smile on his face, like happy as he could be. And I thought, wow.
Didn't he ask you in the tent?
So what happened was,
I loved fire. I mean, they would drag. I remember they dragged out this giant limb the day before, and it had 1,000 sticks coming off it. And they had set up camp and everything. And by the time camp was set up, I had every single twig off that branch, and it was in the fire. I mean, I loved it. And so I woke up that morning, and I was like, "Dad, what do I do with my pull-up? We don't have any trash cans like we do at home. Like, this is not normal." And he's like, "Well, you can just put it on the fire." And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I was like, "I can burn it?"
They do burn. They do burn.
And I never burned a pull-up, so I wasn't sure what was going to happen. It went up in about half a second. I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
I will tell you, the s'mores tasted kind of funny that day.
Oh, my gosh.
Didn't was it you that used to float around with the fish scraps after you fill that in?
No, they would clean fish there on the bay side, and once they get through, they just jump in the water, float around with the old fish heads and everything, and going around, no concern of any.
So they jumped in the chum slick. Essentially.
Jumped in the chum slick, right? And as they would get around to the point, then they'd stand up and walk back to shore. That's just the way they did it back then.
That's outstanding.
So our first trip to Little Gasparilla Island was with Steve and Joy Thompson and Travis and Emily. And this would have been before we had kids. So this would have been mid-80s, probably 85, 86.
I was an 11-year-old white boy, so that would have been 86.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
And that was the summer I got stung by the stingray.
Yes, it was.
Okay. So we came down. They invited us to come down and stay with them a couple of nights. And we'd never been here before. Heard a lot of stories. We actually planned the trip on one of our many ice cream evenings at Andy's Igloo in Winter Haven. So we planned the trip there. So we came down. We didn't know what to expect or anything. Steve, I don't think, had a boat, but borrowed somebody's boat.
We borrowed Uncle Mike's boat?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know that we caught a fish that – I don't know that we fished that much. But anyway, that was beside the point. But we stayed in this place, mid-island, in between the bay and the beach side. You want to stay on either the bay or the beach. You don't want to be stuck in the middle or
it's
the canal.
It's a mosquito haven.
It is.
And this was the days before golf carts.
Exactly. And you don't really get the bay when you don't get the beach. You get the mosquitoes. And so this place was called the Beasley's place, right?
Uh-huh.
And there are a couple of distinct things I remember, three things I remember in particular. One, the mosquitoes, and no matter where you went, mosquitoes were just all over you. Second thing I remember is the fan in our bedroom, the ceiling fan. The lights were hung above the fan. And so when you turn the fan on and the lights on, it was like a strobe light.
It's called the Casablanca effect.
Yes, yes. And so my eyes blinked for about 2 weeks after I left that place. I remember that. And then I also remember in the bathroom, the toilet was on an angle. And so fortunately it was a forward angle so you could get off when you were done. Yes, exactly. But if you're not careful, you got off before you were done and you just tumbled right through the door. And those are the things. Now, so I told that story to somebody the other day, and they said, and you've been going down there for 26 years in a row now? Yeah, but I'm not really sure why.
Keep going back. Kaylee was the first. How old were you the first time you came? Not that you remember this.
I think I was like 6 or 8 weeks
old. Is that right? So you were the youngest baby that we remember.
Yes. Yeah. 25 years.
But you're still winning. So this is, yeah, 20.
So we were down here not long after we bought our boat, and we thought, hey, it'd be fun to tube down there. So we bought one of those big tubes that you get at, play it against sports or whatever. And so we came down, and we were tubing out in the bay, and Matt was 6 years old, maybe, something. And he was a kind of a little guy then too, even for his age. He was pretty small,
but strong.
Very strong, very strong. So we were tubing, and Steve and Matt got on the tube at the same time, and so we were tubing and everything, and somehow Steve flipped off the
the boat slowed down, the tube kind of nosedived into the water and threw us both off.
You still think that was my fault?
It was your fault.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. So both of you went in the water, and I guess Steve, you threw Matt back up.
Pitched him right back up.
Yeah, because he weighed nothing, and so we were so Steve was hanging on to the tube, and the tide's ripping, and I'm trying to move the boat around and everything else, and so what we're looking at back there is Steve trying to struggle for his life, and we hear Matt say, in his 5-year-old voice, "Hold on, Mr. Steve. I'll pull you up."
All 220 pounds of it.
Matt probably weighed 35 pounds.
Right. But Steve never could get on the tube. And so there's Gasparilla Pass that goes out to the ocean.
Where Tammy pushed me out years ago.
Yes. So. And it was an outgoing, strong outgoing tide. And so he's starting to drift down that way. Right?
Right.
And how did you? Did we I ever held end
on.
Up saving
yeah, I held
you,
on. You got me
did
over.
Did you die that day?
I did. You got me over there. What everybody now gets in those shallows and hangs out there in that little.
You basically created the sandbar.
I did. Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, I did.
The OG sandbar guy.
So they helped me get in the boat, and all was good.
It was another one of those times where you go, "What could have happened that day?"
So in my defense, I had seen how easily Mr. Steve got me onto the tube, and I thought, "Well, hey. If he can do it, I can do it." So I reached my little arm down there. I was like, this can't be that hard. He's floating. I was like, he's got to be lighter when he's floating, right? That was how my 5-year-old logic worked.
Matt went on to become valedictorian.
Yep, I did.
So there is hope for...
But I am not a physics major.
I do have a favorite story of Nathan's one of my favorite people to turkey hunt with, if not the favorite, because he listens and he's probably as good with a yelper, mouth call, hand call, whatever. He is really good. So we finally...
He's like the son you never had.
Yeah, yeah, right. So we get out there and, man, we're doing some, it was like the second day of the opening weekend, and we're looking, we're scouting, and we locate a couple of turkeys, and they're gobbling, and Nathan and I'm saying, okay, man, just be quiet, listen, let's, put these turkeys to bed. We'll know where they're at the next morning. So, sure enough, we did. Next morning, we're over at the camp, and we're talking, and I said, we got to get up, we got to get there quick, we want to get down in there, and I said, once we start walking, we don't say a word. You got it? Yes, sir. And I said, and if I yelp, you yelp. If I yelp twice, you yelp twice. And this is your turkey, man. You're going to do the shooting. So we get down in there, and we get set up, and I got Nate right where he's supposed to be. And Nate is facing north. And the old turkey, not one of the others, but a big, big gobbler, starts gobbling south of Nate. And I'm thinking, okay, Nate, switch around so you can look south where he's going to come from.
I didn't.
We're yelping. We're doing a fantastic job. I mean, he is absolutely doing great. That old gobbler is coming closer and closer. I finally just took my shotgun. I said, I've just got to lay it down or I'll shoot this turkey. So I laid it down and said, this is his to win or lose. So sure enough, the turkey comes up by the decoy. Nate's still facing the wrong way. And he's like, he's looking at me, and I'm like, you know, kind of sign language eyes back to him. And so the turkey went into a full strut, turned his back to him. So Nate quickly turned, and the turkey turned on around, and Nathan got a perfect shot, dispatched him right away. I was so proud, I jumped up and sprinted. And if he would made one peep, I was going to jump on him. Not Nate, the turkey. But it was
Didn't
was
you have
great.
Another one come
it
running
great.
Up?
That's,
no, that was a different story.
That was a different day?
Same general area.
But okay, I thought there were two that day.
We were hunting, and we had, five gobblers around us that morning, gobbling in different various directions. And we're sitting there, and he's off to my right a little bit, and we're both calling, kind of same situation. We're kind of just calling back and forth a little bit. All of a sudden, we hear something on a limb behind Steve, kind of like nails scratching, almost like a bird sitting on the limb. And I kind of just thought it was like a heron because we were near a cypress pond or something. And so all of a sudden this turkey pitches down right in front of Steve, and it's a gobbler. And I was like, I don't have a shot. And about the time I thought to myself, I don't have a shot, boom, and down goes the turkey. And he flopped. And
I had a
flopped.
Shot.
Yeah. Yeah, shot. And he flopped into the water and, you know, messed up his feathers and stuff. But that was cool. We went over there and started high-fiving. Yeah, nice, good job. And then as we're doing that, finishing up, a turkey gobbles back about, 100 yards from us or something like
right.
that? I mean, right there.
Coming to us.
And we kind of scramble real fast and get kind of set up. And this area is a quota hunt area. And it was the opening weekend. And I was hunting on a guest permit.
So you weren't sure you could kill one.
So it's one turkey per actual permit. Per quota permit. So technically, we already filled our limit. And I'm sitting there, and I start calling a little bit, and Steve kind of leans out and says, Nate, I don't think you can kill another turkey. And I'm like,
so he just
dang
invited
it, okay,
you.
Yeah.
He just invited you to watch him shoot one.
Yeah. And I was like, shoot.
He gets so sad when things like that happen. You can just see it in his countenance.
It was a little disappointing, but it was a fun morning. And we did not break the law, did not shoot another turkey, but that was a good hunt.
Thanks for keeping me legal.
Yeah, thank you for keeping me legal.
All right, so we've got a couple years ago, you brought your cousins from Alabama. I'm talking to Terry, Nate's dad. You brought your cousins from Alabama down, and they are big speck fishermen.
Bass
or
fishermen.
Or, I'm sorry, Alabama listeners, crappie fishermen.
Crappie, mm-hmm. Yeah, so these are my first cousins, and they're all about 10 or 15 years older than me. And we've been talking about bringing them down and letting them catch some snook and redfish and whatnot. So three of them came down, Al, Jimmy, and Wayne, and my dad also came. So this is about 10 years ago now. My dad's name's Jimmy. They call him James. My cousin's name is Jimmy. He's not James. And then my cousin Al is married to a woman named Jimmy.
Well, that's redundant because we said they're from Alabama.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, it's a little confusing. But anyway, that has nothing to do with the story. So they came down, and they really never saltwater fished other than maybe deep sea before. So we came down and stayed. Steve came as well first of all, he wanted to hang out with them. And Nate, did you come on that trip?
I was there.
Yeah,
yes.
So Nate was here too. And we also needed a second boat. And so Steve brought Travis's boat. Was that? What boat was that?
That was the Stott. That was our boat.
The Stott, yeah. You guys own that together. And
which is like a Carolina skiff type boat. It was a little
great,
skiff, 16 foot.
Great boat. We had my Pathfinder and his Stott. And so we're heading down on one of the trips down Charlotte Harbor. Well, it's on the channel going toward Charlotte Harbor from Little Gasparilla. It's kind of choppy.
Real choppy.
A little overcast.
Very overcast.
About a 5 mile an hour northwest wind.
30, 40 miles
sun
an hour.
Yeah, it was 8:35 in the morning.
Yeah, you got that right.
Okay. And you were following me, I think.
Trying to.
Yeah. Tell us what happened, Steve.
Well, we were bouncing pretty good in all
Tell
that bad.
Tell us about the trolling motor.
Well, can I say that I had put a trolling motor on the boat like a month before that? I had bought a used trolling motor and installed it on the boat. A motor guide. Great.
So maybe
white.
Next time we're going to look at the installation a little bit more. Because I was ripping along there trying to chase that Pathfinder down.
Okay, first, hang on. The trolling motor was not in the folded up position.
It was used, and so it didn't fold up.
That's
right. Right. It didn't fold up.
So it was in the operational position while you're cruising down the channel.
It was used. And as we were, I was bouncing through there, and all of a sudden, I didn't have a trolling motor. I didn't see it go. I just know all of a sudden, and I asked your cousin, I said, "Where's the trolling motor?" He said, "Back there." And I just
pretty smart from up there.
I just kept on getting it. I thought there's no sense going back. So.
Yeah,
anyway.
Which reminds me, we'll get back to the cousins in a second, but it reminds me, you had a boat called the Sea Squirt at one point. And that thing, we called it the Butt Buster because it just bounced all over the place. And I had a relatively new,
brand new
Coleman stove that we brought down. And you were running some stuff, over to the marina to put in the car. So you had that Coleman stove on the front of the boat. And that Coleman stove is out in the bay somewhere today.
I think. Structure is a very important thing in a fishery.
Right.
So when it went over, it bubbled for a few minutes when I turned around, but there was no way to get it. Yeah. So it's down there somewhere.
Right. Yep. So when my cousins were here, one of the places we like to fish down here, one of my friends named it the Henderson Hole because we fish there a lot. And it's a place where we're talking about it today. It's almost guaranteed snook. You catch snook there on an outgoing tide, almost guaranteed. Not big snook, but they're fun to catch. So I thought, Stephen, well, let's take them over there. So we went over there, and we fished in the afternoon. We were catching snook, and they were having a good, really good time because, they're used to catching crappie and whatnot. And so we were fishing, and occasionally when you throw your white bait out, if it stays on the surface for a second, a seagull will come down and try to grab it. And so that day, the seagull was faster than my cousin was. And so this is my cousin Al. And
same one as saw the trolling motor disappear, I believe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's the same one I got a story about later, too. So Al, we told him, Al, you got to reel the thing in because you can't, cut the line and let the bird die because, we're all about conservation and everything. And so he starts reeling it in, and the bird is flying, of course. And Terry, this is like flying a kite. I've never caught a bird before. It's like flying a kite, he said. And he reeled the thing in. We threw a towel over it, as you're supposed to do. Unhooked it, let it go. I think we might have caught two on that trip. And then the same day, I was fishing, and I caught a snook, and I was reeling it in, and a porpoise grabbed the snook while I still had it on my line. This never happened to me before. And that porpoise took off and just started fooling me. I mean, faster than you can imagine. Because I thought, okay, wow, this snook's really taking off. Then I figured out, okay, it's a porpoise. It has my snook. And it's just zzzz. And the porpoise took two leaps out of the air, and it was 15 feet in the
easy.
Air.
It was,
easy.
It was SeaWorld.
It was spectacular.
Twice.
Yeah. And then the best part of this whole story is there's some idiot in a boat coming out of Gasparilla Marina. And he's telling me, cut your line, cut your line. All I'm doing is watching the thing smoke in my hand. And then, in 10 seconds, it was broken off. But
I don't know how fast they can swim, but I would say 30 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour.
In the air.
In the air.
They weigh 800 pounds.
And he was smoking it. I've never seen anything like that in my life.
It was crazy.
And it did break the line.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So we got back to the cabin. And one of the things they enjoyed doing, for whatever reason, is catching pinfish off the dock, which was great because we like to use pinfish for bait. So they're out there, and just catching pinfish.
Catching bream.
Right. Well, one of them caught a crab. Not a
blue crab.
Yeah, blue
a pretty
crab.
Good size.
It was decent size for down here, a blue crab. And and this is Al again. Now, he spent a lot of time in Mobile, and so he says, all right, Let me show you how to take these things off. I learned this growing up in Mobile. There's a certain way you have to do it, and you grab them just like this so they don't, And that crab pinched the tar out of him, and I will never, ever let him live that down.
Well, it's funny you should end with that. Are you going to talk about snapper, aren't you, Nate?
I have a snapper story about Terry.
How old are you in this story?
Oh, I was about 48. Oh, him.
Yeah.
No, I'm probably 10 or 11. I don't know. And we're at what we called the snook hole. And we called a keeper snapper, as we like to do sometimes over there. And Dad's grabbing. He's got it in his hand. He's trying to unhook it. And he looks at me and said, "Now, Nate, one thing you don't ever want to do is get your finger in front of their mouth." That snapper latched on to his finger.
And wouldn't open his mouth?
Would not open his mouth.
I opened my mouth.
And I would look at the fish and I'd look at Terry. I'd look at the fish and I'd look at Terry's face. I'd look at the fish. It was hilarious.
And Dad almost squeezed that snapper in half trying to get that thing to let go of his finger.
I almost had to kill it to get it off.
Yeah, thank God it was a keeper.
But that was a heck of a lesson that we all learned.
That's right. That's right. I will never forget to do not put your finger in front of a snapper.
That was an object lesson.
To this day, I think you use pliers to get silk out of a snapper's mouth.
Yeah.
Pliers and some.
Why is Terry deathly afraid of snapper? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, was it Nathan that did zing pop?
Zzz pop. Zzz pop.
He hated for, what was it that he hated?
Well, so this is at the snook hole again. And we used to catch some, that's where Kaylee caught her 18-pounder, the family record. And we used to we used to catch some really nice snook down there. And so, one day we had the boat beached and we had a line out kind of in the pass off the back of the boat, and Nathan was sitting in the boat, and he's probably again
six years old,
and something grabbed the bait and just took off with it. It just spooled that thing, and so we all came over there and said, "Nathan, what happened? What happened? Nathan, what did you tell us?"
It went zzz pop.
And so from that day forward, if we get spooled on something, it's zzz pop every single time.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's happening.
Tell it.
Oh, my gosh.
This is another object lesson that the Henderson-Thompson crew has learned over the years. And so we were down at the beach one day, and we had pulled the boats around to make it easier. And we're all
I did
just,
not know what story this was going to be, but now I'm
and
happy
we're all
about
just
this.
Hanging out in the water, having a grand old time. The water's really clear.
Yeah, really clear. And we had just pulled around.
Yep.
You were pulling around.
Pulling around.
Oh, yeah, we hadn't anchored yet.
We haven't even anchored yet.
But Travis was anchored.
Travis
and so
was
we
anchored
pulled up
already
next
there.
To his boat.
And Travis
scouted the
Travis yells
circumstances.
At us and says, "There's a school of something right out there."
After the something, he and Nathan then proceed to spend the next 25 minutes saying every fish under the sea as to what this school could be.
The whole time, Dad, so Travis grabs a pole for Dad because we didn't bring any poles.
Because of course you wouldn't bring poles
right, no.
to the beach.
So Travis grabs like an old rod that he had, gives it to Dad. Dad casts, immediately hooks a fish. So he's reeling it in the entire time. The entire time Dad is reeling it in. Nathan's like, "I think it's red." No. And Travis is in the water.
It's a tarpon.
Reeling.
It's a tarpon.
It's a
snook.
Jack. It's a bug.
It's like, a manatee.
I think they went through every species in the Gulf.
Yes. And Dad is reeling in. Halfway through reeling in this, what we come to find out is a jack. The rod breaks in half.
Snap.
In half.
My
snaps.
Rod breaks in half.
So he then turned, we have to grab towels.
So the rod snaps in half. Dad just turns around and looks at us with this look on his face like, "What do I do now?" And so he's sitting there fighting with half a pole in his hand. And so we grab
like
towels.
A towel, I think, is what we
ended. We grabbed the towel and started hand pulling in this, it ended up being a jack, this jack in. And we pulled up. It was a huge jack, too. I mean, it was massive.
Probably 10 pounds.
Travis and Nate still yelling what it could be as the rod breaks.
It was so exciting.
Literally the most exciting thing I've
until
ever
until the jack got in the boat, they said every species except for jack, I think. Yeah. I think we guessed everything but jack. So that was the object lesson we learned. Always keep a rod in the boat.
Always keep a rod in the boat. Absolutely.
One that won't break, preferably.
Preferably one of your own. Matt, would you like to tell a story of your first redfish?
This is another time when my dad was in the hospital down here. Actually, in the hospital this time. He's fine now. It ended up being all right.
Yeah, debatable. I'm not going to put that out there.
But because he was in the hospital, I got to use the Pathfinder that week.
Correct.
So I also got to fish with his wife and kids.
Also correct. We were fishing the lights at night on the docks, and I was probably 9. and we were trolling around, and we came to the light at the end of the dock that we're actually staying at this week.
Yep.
I had never caught a redfish before, but I'd cast it up under there, and sure enough.
And man, you'd had a crappy week because your dad had been sick. And, like, you hadn't gotten to fish a lot.
Right.
There was a tropical storm that week, too.
There was also a tropical storm. It was a bad week, and so we were all just kind of blowing off some steam. And sure enough, that thing, oh, it started zip, but no pop. And I pulled it in, and it was a monster redfish.
Yeah, and so we were within, now I'll tell this because this was the statute of limitations. Is
what
now
is
expired.
The statute of limitations? And but I was a minor, so it's not my fault.
Yeah. And I did not have my captain's license at that time. But yeah, I get the fish in, and I got this kid looking at me like, can we keep it? Like, this is my first redfish I've ever caught. Can we keep it?
Again, my dad's in the hospital. We have a tropical storm going. We don't know what's happening.
So I lay it on the measuring board, and I just kept sliding it until it hit 27 inches. I'm like,
and Travis
27 inches on the
dot. And I was like, yay, it's perfect. And so we have a picture that we'll put on Instagram.
That's still one of my favorite pictures.
Of me with that giant redfish. And I was the happiest
Your
kid
mom
in the world.
Was there.
I forgot about
you were there,
all the
were you
problems
there,
that I had that week. And everything just kind of melted away. And I was just so happy about that redfish. I've never caught a redfish that big before again. Yeah, that was a good night.
That's still one of my favorite fishing pictures
other
of all time.
Yeah.
I was getting blood transfusions that night.
Well, your boat worked great.
Wow, no one was there with you in the hospital. We were
and I noticed you didn't mind stretching the law a little bit when it wasn't your boat that you were in either.
So that wraps up volume 2 of our stories episodes. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to get back to our regularly scheduled programming next week, where you'll have our what's news, our topic, and our keep and release, and maybe a game will be the foot. Who knows?
Follow us on social media at Cast and Blast FL and stay woke.
You're listening to the Cast and Blast Florida podcast. The podcast is the brainchild of Travis Thompson and Nathan Henderson. Make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, leave us a review on iTunes, and follow us on social media at Cast and Blast FL.